It's about 15 seconds after the hour. I'm Ben Brown. Today is Tuesday, the 2nd of August. It's already August. How about that? This is a Juno afternoon. We've got some great guests today, including Beth Weigel. We're going to talk about some library activities. We're going to hear from some of the folks involved with the First Folio Shakespeare readings, which continue. Sarah Gress and Shana Rauer will be here to highlight the big latch on. We're going to get a preview of Heat Wave, a summer drag soiree from Gigi Monroe, and New York City's delighted to be here. And, some folks here to talk about Discovery Southeast's summer camp. So stay tuned for Juno Afternoon as soon as National Native News is over here.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Communities in north central Saskatchewan are grappling with an oil spill in the North Saskatchewan River. A breached pipeline owned by Husky Oil has leaked more than 60,000 gallons of oil and chemicals into the major waterway. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, at least one First Nation has declared a state of emergency as water restrictions were put in place.
The spill took place more than a week ago. Affected communities that depend on the North Saskatchewan River were forced to shut down their water intakes. All are now scrambling to find other sources of clean water. The Muscadet First Nation relies on the city of Prince Albert for its water, but Prince Albert has also been affected. It built a 20-mile water pipeline from the South Saskatchewan River to access clean water. Muscadet has turned to other communities for help, and Chief Austin Bear says an arrangement with the province to bring in water has failed because of logistical issues.
Even though we're able to manage the crisis at the moment, we don't know how long this is going to persist. It may persist for weeks and perhaps even months.
Muscadet has about 800 band members who live on the reserve. And in Saskatoon, along the South Saskatchewan River, people came together to support those affected by the oil spill. Jackie Crow says they want to focus attention on the challenges people and animals face during the cleanup.
To pray for the healing of the water and to pray for the people that are affected either by this spill or those living in communities where there is no clean drinking water. A lot of First Nations reserves are without good drinking water.
Crow also says the spill highlights the need to move towards renewable resources. Husky Oil has said it will pay for the costs associated with the spill, including the cleanup. But that could take months since the oil is dispersing as it moves downstream and becomes more difficult to skim off the top of the river. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's Office of the Inspector General is conducting a criminal investigation into last year's Gold King Mine waste spill. As Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports, the agency wants to determine if anyone involved in the spill violated federal law.
The agency revealed last week it's been conducting the investigation along with the U.S. Department of Justice. It follows requests by several elected officials, including Arizona Senator John McCain and Wyoming Senator John Barrasso. They want to determine if anyone within the EPA committed a crime in accidentally triggering the spill. Agency contractors caused the release of 3 million gallons of mine waste into the Animas and San Juan Rivers last August. The EPA took responsibility and continues to monitor water quality. In addition, the agency says a larger evaluation of the incident will be put on hold as it conducts the criminal review. A spokesman for the EPA didn't specify when the results of the investigation will be released. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
Ojibwe storyteller Jim Northrup has passed away. Condolences flooded social media Monday night after his family announced his death online. The Vietnam veteran had been sick with cancer. He was known for his books, poems, and humor. In this 2013 interview with Fond du Lac Community Radio Station, WGZS in Minnesota, Northrup talks about teaching students maple syrup harvesting.
We are a field trip destination because we've had Head Start students here. We've had elementary school through senior high school and into the college level. People come out to learn what we're doing and how we do it. I like it. I think it's important. Perhaps it even erases some of the barriers that racism put up.
Because the kids are coming from all races.
Yeah.
Northrup was 73 years old at the time of his death. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
And by Humboldt State University's online Master of Social Work program, which focuses on decolonizing work with rural and indigenous communities. Applications accepted August 1st to 31st at humboldt.edu/socialwork. The Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department welcomes the 3rd Annual Southwest Native American Veterans Association September 22nd through the 24th. Information on convention and tourism services at siabq.org.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes after the hour. Now it's 6 minutes and 3 seconds after the hour, but we were pretty close to right on time there. I'm Ben Brown. Today is Tuesday the 2nd of August, 2016, and this is a Juneau afternoon, and our first guests today are Beth Weigel and Allison Gregory, the program coordinator for the Juneau Public Libraries, and a state library intern, Allison, who's on loan, more or less, to the public library in Juneau.
That's right.
For the summer. So Allison and Beth, welcome to a Juneau afternoon.
Thanks, Ben.
Thank you.
And I understand there's some fun, as there always are, fun and exciting things happening at the library. So
always something fun at the library, yep. So basically the big fun thing we do in the summer is our summer reading program, and this is our final week of the programming for the summer reading. So we've got a couple of great things still happening this week. We'll still have our story times as usual at 11 at the various libraries on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And then
Just really quick to unpack this. Mm-hmm. It's 11 downtown on Wednesday,
yep.
Douglas Thursday, Valley Friday.
You've got it.
I thought I remembered that from a prior episode of this show. So
that's,
there we go.
That's great. I'm so glad that you actually know that. That means other people probably do too.
I hope so.
and then we have our Lego Club that meets every month on Wednesday, tomorrow at 5:30 at the Valley Library. And then we have our final sort of like hurrah for our summer reading program on Friday, which is going to be our Olympian Challenge.
And what's involved in the Olympian Challenge?
Well, Allison has been working very hard on the Olympian Challenge, so she can tell you a little bit about what's going to be happening.
All right. First of all, is there any Zika virus in the
valley? No. We have good water here.
All right, good. Because we certainly have mosquitoes. So, sorry, it was a bad Olympics joke. Allison, tell us about the Olympian Reading Challenge.
So the Olympian Challenge will be at the Valley Library, and we will be co-hosting with the Juneau Parks and Recreation. They'll be having a silly hepathlon featuring a 100-meter dizzy dash, cornhole, a crab walk scramble, and we'll also have some activities going on inside around the World Hopscotch Games, lots of puzzles, and a Lego challenge.
So these are above and beyond just words on a page. These are some physical activities.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got some great space out at the Valley where we can just go right outside, and there's this beautiful lawn now that's coming in. And so we have space to either be inside or outside. We've got our big, you know, meeting room. So we'll have all that space to do all kinds of fun activities.
And this is what time on Friday?
1 to 3 p.m.
1 to 3 p.m. And the weather forecast is for partly sunny on Friday.
This is
sounding pretty enticing.
Yes.
Do people have to register in advance for the Olympian Challenge, or can they just show right on up?
They can just show right on up. It'll be from 1 to 3, and if all goes well with the technical gods of the Olympiad, then we will also be live streaming the opening ceremonies afterwards in the big meeting room. So.
Outstanding. Okay, so that's just one specific activity that's this Friday. Mm-hmm. But some of these other activities, the reading challenge, have been going on all summer.
All throughout the summer, right. We've been having our reading games, and so that means that those are going to be coming to a close. You need to turn in all of your reading games by August 14th. That'll be the last day, and then, you know, you can come in, get your free book if you've done your reading logs. I'm actually going to pull all the book reviews this week and hand out some more prizes. There'll be some teen prizes and adult prizes. So all that stuff needs to come in here by the 14th so we can get all our prizes handed out. And we just thank all of the businesses that supported all of our summer reading program this year. And so we'll, after this week, we'll also take a little break from our toddler times and story times. We just take a short 2-week break so we can all kind of get reset and take a quick little vacation if needed or whatever. So the next 2 weeks after this week, those will be on hold. And then we'll be back to normal. And we have some other great things happening at the library as well that are geared and aligned with the first folio visit at the State Library. So we're hosting, of course, some of the Theater in the Rough readings at the library on Thursday evenings. This week will be Two Gentlemen of Verona.
And this is the Valley Library.
This is the Valley Library, right. Those are from 7 to 10. And so we'll be doing Two Gentlemen of Verona this Thursday, next Thursday, Midsummer Night's Dream on August 11th, and then Merchant of Venice on August 18th. So fun times with that. We're also having an author come in from London. His name's Graham Watts, and he wrote a book called about the first folio. It's called Shakespeare's Authentic Performance Text, The Case for Staging from the First Folio. So he's an internationally known director. He's worked with the Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater Company many times. Some of our friends from up there will be coming down too. And Graham's going to give a talk about, basically how to create characters and staging from the first folio and why that's important to refer to that original text on Thursday, August 18th at the Valley Library before our reading that night. So come a little early if you're planning to come to the reading that night, because that'll be a talk not to be missed by internationally known director Graham Watts. And he'll have some of the guys from our friends from Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater there to kind of do little examples of what changes when you're using the first folio versus maybe one of the other editions or something like
right.
that.
Right, the stage directions or even some of the actual text.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Well, that sounds really exciting. And what play is going to be read that night?
That night will be Merchant of Venice.
Okay, excellent,
yes.
Excellent.
And we're also going to do a little Bardathon-style reading. If you're more interested in being a part of readings, then you can come by the Downtown Library on Friday, August 19th, Saturday, August 20th, or Sunday, August 21st, during our open hours, which are basically either 1 to 5 or noon to 5, and cast yourself in a scene or a play, whatever we choose to do. It's open to the public for reading, and that should be fun. And then we're also putting together what we're calling our Folio Go. And that's a little self-guided history, comedy, tragedy path between the Downtown Library and the State Library, where you can stop at a public, spot of importance and do a little scene that'll, provide the perfect background.
So it's like Pokemon Go without the Pokemon.
Exactly. And it's old style. There's no app that we're going to have
right,
or anything.
Exactly.
But it'll be super fun.
Well, it sounds like during your vacation from the vacation, you're going to be busy doing Shakespeare.
Exactly.
So,
right.
No rest for the weary. But the young people get a few weeks off to regroup from their summer of reading before school starts. So.
Exactly, yeah. And then just to top it all off, if that's not enough, we've got some other things. We've got an author coming in on the cruise ship next week. Her name is Ashley Sweeney. She's written a great book called Eliza Waite. It's a story about a young woman who travels to the Klondike during 1898, and she's a widow. And so it's kind of, following that historical sort of period piece thing. And then we've got a teen book buffet on August 16th, which is the final teen sort of summer reading thing. They'll have pizza, library bingo, giveaways, all that sort of fun stuff for kids in grades going into grades 6 through 12.
Outstanding. That's a chance to yell bingo in a library, which you're not supposed to do most of the time.
Right.
So much information, Beth and Allison. Obviously, there has to be an online web resource for folks who are not taking notes quickly enough.
I know, totally. And I even forgot to talk about the programming Think Like a Computer. So there's lots of ways you can find out about more information. You can go to our website at juno.org/library. You can go to our Facebook page, which is Juno Public Libraries, and find out all the information.
Well, there are wonderful resources.
Yeah, or even call the library.
You could also just call the library.
Or stop in.
Or you could even pop by, check out a book, and actually look at the calendar up on the wall.
That's right.
And you could even reserve one of the spaces, one of those lovely community meeting spaces.
That's right. So many things.
I'm so pleased to see, Beth, that you're doing such great work as program coordinator for the library. I just want to ask Allison really quickly, have you enjoyed your internship this summer?
Oh, I have.
And what's your favorite part about it?
I've really enjoyed working with the Youth Services Department and working with the families here in Juneau. It's been a great experience.
Excellent. Well, of course, you're not done yet. There's a whole full plate of things that are still going to be happening between now and Labor Day. So go to the Juneau Public Library website or Facebook page, learn more about it. Kids, get your reading logs in if you want to get the prizes that you have so very closely, richly earned by reading a lot of books this summer. And we're going to actually have our next guest on to talk a little bit more about some of the first folio activities. So for those of you who are Shakespeare aficionados, we're going to have some more information about that in just a moment.
Thanks,
so,
Ben.
Beth, Allison, thanks very much. I wish you both the best this Juneau afternoon.
Here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 2nd of August, 2016. It was on this day in 1932 the American physicist Carl Anderson discovered the first physical evidence that antimatter was more than just an idea. Physicists had been speculating as long ago as the late 19th century that there may exist particles in matter that are exact opposites of the matter that surrounds us, mirror image, anti-atoms, and perhaps even whole anti-solar systems, where matter and antimatter might meet and annihilate one another. Carl Anderson, on this day, 1932, was photographing and tracking the passage of cosmic rays through a cloud chamber, a cylindrical container filled with dense water vapor lit from the outside with a viewing window. When individual particles passed through the sides of the container into the saturated air, they would leave spider web tracks of condensation, each type of particle forming a uniquely shaped trail. Anderson noticed a curious pattern, a trail like that of an electron with an exactly identical but opposite curve, an electron's mirror image, evidence of an anti-electron. He named the particle the positron, and he won a Nobel Prize for the discovery 4 years later. It was in 1940 that the science fiction writer Isaac Asimov took up this idea of the particle, using it as the basis for his fictional positronic brain, a structure made of platinum and iridium, and his means for imparting human-like consciousness to the robots in his story. And the fictional uses of antimatter have since spread throughout literature and popular entertainment, from the writing of Robert Heinlein to the classic British TV series Doctor Who, to Star Trek, and to Dan Brown's Angels and Demons. It's the birthday of the novelist and essayist James Baldwin, born Harlem, 1924, oldest of nine children, family dominated by his stepfather, a Pentecostal minister. James left home in 1943, moved to Greenwich Village, wrote about it in Notes of a Native Son, and then when he was 24, expatriated himself to France, where he hoped he could escape the label of black writer. Here's a poem for today by Ken Kraft entitled Snapper. Atop the ridge near the driveway, small ramparts of sandy dirt behind her, a snapping turtle lays her eggs at dusk. Her eyes, heavy-lidded, blink with boredom at her audience. Supreme in her ill-chosen spot, her helmet of stink, the algae like wet war ribbons clinging to her carapace, she appears exhausted with ancientness. Behind lies the dark tail of her reptilian conscience. In front, the set jaw of resignation, resolve. It'll be gone tomorrow, I tell my son, all of it. The next morning, in place of the snapper, a hole well dug and white leather casings, hollow remnants of raccoon rapture, and somewhere down in the bog, mud and indifference. A poem, Snapper, by Ken Kraft, from The Indifferent World, published by Future Cycle Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years. And by Lumosity, with a 10-minute fit test to calculate baseline scores and training programs with 50 challenging brain games. Learn more at lumosity.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It is 20 minutes after the hour. Today's Tuesday, the 2nd of August. Ben Brown here on a Juno afternoon with Aaron Elmore from Theater in the Rough.
Afternoon, Ben.
Good afternoon to you, Aaron. How are you doing today?
I'm very, very well, thanks.
Excellent. So we are talking about First Folio. There's a copy of it. For anyone who has missed this press release, there's a beautiful copy of this many hundred-year-old book over in one of the rooms at the Andrew P. Keshavarov building.
That's right. It's in the lecture hall over there, just off of the lobby. Right across the lobby from the Alaska State Museum. It was brought here by the Alaska State Library, our part of the division, and it is accessible during the hours of noon to 5 from Monday to Saturday, but the hours are a little bit longer on Friday. They'll go until 10 in the evening because we, Theater in the Rough, are reading plays in the lobby of the Andrew P. Keshavarov building, and you're going to be able to check out the folio while we're there doing those readings.
That's it, and it's a very cool book. I believe the first day it was available was last Tuesday.
I believe that's correct.
Because
yes.
After my show, I popped on over there and I took a look at it. And I had seen a copy of it before at the Folger Library. When I was an undergraduate in D.C., I would actually go to the theater there pretty frequently.
For heaven's sakes. Well, this copy comes from the Folger Library, of course, mm-hmm. as you may have mentioned. And they have purposed to get a copy of the first folio in every state of our fair country, in Puerto Rico and Washington, D.C. The first folio is the first public published compilation of William Shakespeare's collected works. It was put together by two actors in his company, friends of his, longtime shareholder friends of his, who he worked with for decades. Their last names are Hemings and Condell. And these two men, about 7 years after Shakespeare passed away, and Shakespeare passed away 400 years ago this year, in 1616. These two guys decided they would finally publish an authoritative collection of Shakespeare's plays. And so they put this together, and it was popular enough. It's a fairly expensive book at its time, but it was popular enough that they actually went into four editions. So this thing had some legs to it, this Shakespeare stuff. Seems to have lasted pretty well.
And, of course, one thing that I think is often said about the folios is, until they were published, there are many plays that we consider some of Shakespeare's most important that were not recorded for posterity anywhere else. They were only in the folio. So if they hadn't made the folio, there are several plays we might not ever know.
They'd be gone.
Yes.
Well, one of which, of course, is a play that certain radio personalities are going to be reading in tomorrow night at the Rockwell. Julius Caesar is one of those plays that we just wouldn't have today. About half of the book are plays that just would not exist for us. The others were published in a quarto version. Most of those were unofficial, and many of them have mistakes, emendations. Lots of those are interesting. They have more stage directions in this, so you can see what the actual production was like, because most of those were cribbed by somebody coming to the audience, paying for a ticket, and writing down the play as quickly and as well as they could. In some cases, very well. In some cases, very badly. So there's a wide variety of normal when it comes to quartos.
Excellent. And so this, of course, the project of First Folio is not every state capital or state or jurisdiction is doing what we're doing.
No, sirree. No, they're not. In fact, as far as I've heard from the Folger Library itself, Theater in the Rough is the first outfit that decided that their response would be to read every single one of the plays in the first folio, all 36 plays, which is a pretty exciting project, and we've been going at it now. Well, we've read, 9, 10, 11 of them. We've read 11 of them, and we're so we only have a few to go, but we started last Monday with Much Ado About Nothing. We've been reading them at 6 locations around town. We read one a night during the week. Mondays were at the Juno Arts and Culture Center at the Jack. Tuesday nights were at the Egan Library out at the University. Wednesdays were at Rockwell Restaurant downtown in their back room there. Thursdays were at the Mendenhall Valley Library, the new library out there. Fridays were over here at the new museum building, the APK, formerly known as SLAM. And Saturdays were at McPheeters Hall. Now, bear in mind, we do one a night for 4 weeks. That's only going to take care of 20 plays. So in order to take care of the additional 16 plays, we read 4 a day on Saturdays.
No rest for the weary on Saturday.
No rest for the weary. Thank you very much. We start at 10 in the morning, and we read until about 10 at night. Last Saturday was amazing. We read Henry VIII. There were an audience of two. By the time we read Othello, one of those audience members had been sucked into the reading process. But we had 3 to 5 people there. Some of them had to go, and then they came back and so forth. By Troilus and Cressida, 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday, it may surprise everyone to learn there was only one person who was there, but she stayed the whole time. She's been very faithful, and she's seen a lot of these. And then Taming of the Shrew, we had about 12 people there. So it's, I would say every single time somebody shows up to one of these, it's always a delight for me because it's a chance for them to let the play just wash over them. What we found is most of the time, and this was unexpected to me, but it makes complete sense, most people read along with us on their phones or in a book that they bring with, that they've, you know, a cherished copy of the complete works that they might have. And what they're able to do as they read along is, first of all, kind of help their brains absorb some of the language and some of the story, helps keep track of characters, who's talking at one time, because generally speaking, these characters have more people in them than we have readers to read them. So we double up. But the other thing they'll see are the differences between what we're reading, which is the actual folio text, and edited texts that have come out of 400 years worth of scholarship since this was come together.
And if you don't have a copy of the folio version, bring whatever copy you have, because that will be instructive in and of itself.
Absolutely.
Now, I'm going to guess most of these people are reading along silently, but some of them are probably reading audibly and stealing focus from the actors.
It's possible, but we make a lot of noise, so we don't hear that much. And every single one of these has been attended with a little bit of music by us. We've had some drums, and so we're trying to create a little bit of excitement, give people an idea when the battles happen. You know, we'll rattle things along for them. So we're trying to make them not just be read in a dead voice, we're trying to make them come to life.
Absolutely. And for those of you who are thinking about the real Shakespearean theatrical experience and you want to be a groundling, one of the venues is not like the other we were discussing right before we came on the air. Rockwell actually has a full bar.
That's right.
Right
and
next to where
restaurant.
And a restaurant.
So
you could eat a big turkey leg and a tankard of ale.
Yes, yes, you can go a whole hog, as it were, there and enjoy yourself. Yeah, please do. The Rockwell, that's one of the amenities we have there. The Egan Library, this wonderful kind of intimate space we set up way down where they have other events. And, of course, it's such a beautiful building out there, and it's a wonderful atmosphere. We're very, very happy and glad to be able to work out there with great thanks to Beatrice out there, who's sort of got us in the door. Nancy DeCherney, all hail Nancy DeCherney over at the Juno Arts and Culture Center, was the first person to say, yes, I want to be a venue for the first folio reading. So she was very encouraging to have her step up for that. So we were just there again last night reading Coriolanus, a Roman tragedy. It was great fun. My goodness. And the affect of these readings is a little more casual, perhaps, you say. We don't sit around with our hands folded neatly in our laps. We make comments as we go along. If something comes up at us that really astonishes us, it's like, wow, that's a character switch and a half, we'll talk about it. And we'll also stop and explode some of the or expand some of the plot points and some of the things that get a little more fussy. So it's a nice way to just experience the play and get to know some of these plays, particularly some of the more obscure ones if you've never read them before. And it's a tremendous, as somebody who's involved in the readings, I have to say, first of all, huge thanks to all of the people who are putting us up at all these, including Catherine Melba, who's got us into the Valley Library, all of the folks who run security over at the APK building, Claire and Lisa and Bob and Jim, Freya, all these folks who stay very late at night to close the building down after we're gone. And then, of course, the parishioners over at Holy Trinity who put up with us and brought us food, wonderful, on Saturday. They brought us breakfast. They brought us lunch. It was spectacular. So we had plenty of calories, and that's just for the readers. That's for the audience as well. So you can bring your own sandwich if you want, but we've got stuff out there. But the experience of reading these is this incredible, overwhelming kind of sense of the volume and the breadth of this author's work. It's absolutely amazing. I've experienced this guy's writing probably the first time I ever saw anything like Shakespeare was a production of Macbeth on public television. Thank you very much. All props to public television. And it was a British production.
Don't worry, we're in a radio station, not a theater.
Right. Well, but there was two guys and fighting with these enormous broadswords, and one guy died in the end in the most horrible way you can imagine, and I was absolutely captivated from that moment on for the rest of my life. And I have been reading and studying. I have produced, I've directed, I've designed, I've acted in these plays ever since I was in high school. That's quite a while now, as a matter of fact. But I have to tell you, listening to these plays and listening to the human voice bring these words to life is one of the most amazing experiences. I'm so glad we decided to take this on.
And so where do people go to look at the schedule for the remaining plays? Most of the reading parts have probably been assigned, but if you show up, you may get dragooned into reading.
You may get conscripted. You may get press ganged into reading, but there's no guarantee you have to say yes. But the schedule is available through links on the state website, lam.alaska.gov/FirstFolio Alaska, and if you put in First Folio Alaska, I bet that'll get you where you need to go in your search engine. And then the theaterintherough.org website as well will get you all the readings scheduled. So just quickly brush up against them. Tonight at the Egan, we're reading King John. Wednesday, tomorrow night, we're reading Julius Caesar.
Beware the Ides of March.
That's right. Two Gentlemen of Verona, a nice comedy at the Valley Library on Thursday. And Friday, we're back to the Scottish Tragedy. We're going to be reading Macbeth there on Friday. And Saturday, we're extremely excited. We're going to read four histories back to back. We're going to have actors who play the same character right the way through each of the histories. So the guy who takes over the kingdom in Richard II will then become Henry IV and be the same reader through two plays the afternoon. The guy who plays Prince Hal, many people have heard of him, the protege of Falstaff, you know, the famous fat and drunken knight, will be the same actor who reads Henry V at the end of the evening. So we're going to be a wonderful way to explore and experience the Henriad, as it's sometimes called. And that's just a couple of the opportunities we've got coming up.
All right. Well, Aaron Elmore from Theater in the Rough and the State Library Archives and Museum, thank you so much for being here. I look forward to seeing you tomorrow night at the Rockwell. I'll get there a little early for cocktail hour.
Fantastic.
And for those of you out there, find a play that you want to come listen to have read, or perhaps get the opportunity to read in. And soldier on, everyone. Thanks again, Aaron.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. How do you get started learning to identify birds? There are so many, and they hardly sit still long enough for you to have a good look. Well, David Sibley, who literally wrote the book on identifying birds, has some advice.
Spend time at home, paging through the field guide, and at first, names like scoter and vireo and egret are going to seem strange and foreign, but by flipping through the pages of the book and looking at the pictures and reading the names, you'll start to get a sense of what those birds are, what makes a vireo a vireo.
From someone who's observed birds with great interest for years, here's a welcome note.
It doesn't have to be about seeing a lot of different species, but more about getting to know the birds that are common in your neighborhood or in your yard. It can be really rewarding at that level. Another thing that I think is incredibly useful for a beginning birder is to get in touch with a local nature center or Audubon chapter. Someone can take away all the uncertainty and say, yes, that's a song sparrow. Your first 25 or 50 species are the hardest ones to learn, so if you can find somebody who can help you with those, you'll have a really good, solid start.
We're ready to help, too, at birdnote.org.
It's 33 minutes after the hour. Today is Tuesday, the 2nd of August. I'm Ben Brown. This is a Juno afternoon. Our next guests are Sarah Greth and Shana Rower, here to highlight the big latch-on. So, ladies, welcome to a Juno afternoon.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
I've got to ask first question, what is the big latch-on?
Well, good question. The big latch-on is part of a global initiative to support and promote breastfeeding that takes place all over the world during World Breastfeeding Week, which is this week, August 1st through the 7th. And essentially all over the world, different locations register to be part of the event. And women gather together at the registered locations and latch on their babies at a designated time to be counted, the idea being that we're just trying to support and promote breastfeeding.
That's a healthy
community.
Activity, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because the scientific evidence that it's much better for the mother and for the child,
yes,
physically and emotionally, is pretty much irrefutable.
Yes.
So we won't even talk about that. But what's the history of this event? Whose idea was this? How long has it been going on?
Okay, great question. It was started in about 2005 by the Women's Health Action Network in New Zealand. And then in 2010, a woman in Portland hosted the first big latch-on in the United States. And then in 2011, La Leche League got involved, and that really helped to grow the Big Latch On across the United States. And then most recently in 2012, it became a collaboration between breastfeeding advocacy organizations and part of World Breastfeeding Week.
All right. And World Breastfeeding Week, is that a United Nations, a UNESCO designation, or a United World Health Organization? It just seems like for it to be a world week, there would have to be some global entity. Well, we don't have to figure that out right now.
I have no idea.
So if it's happening in Juneau, how many people do you expect to participate here?
We're not exactly sure. I would guess, you know, somewhere between 20 and 50.
Okay.
Yeah, that's kind of the numbers that we're hoping for. This is the first year that I've been aware of us being a location that's participated.
Mm-hmm.
So we really don't know what kind of numbers we're going to get. We have about 400 new babies born each year in Juneau, give or take. And so given the rate of breastfeeding initiation, we could have anywhere, we could certainly have in the hundreds if everybody who's breastfeeding showed up.
Or if everyone who's listening who can
exactly.
talk to all of their friends who are breastfeeding showed up, there's a chance to widen the circle.
Yeah, exactly. So that would be fabulous. But we'll be happy with 20.
Indeed. Well, this is the first year for Juno. You want to, you know, maybe start at a manageable number and get bigger. So, but then globally, there's got to be many, many, many thousands, if not more, women and children participating.
Yes.
Yeah.
Excellent. So what would you say the goal of the event is? I mean, raising awareness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so part of it is just bringing it into the public, normalizing breastfeeding. So raising awareness about the fact that it doesn't happen in isolation. It's through the support and encouragement of our friends and family that people are successful at breastfeeding. We'd like people to feel comfortable doing it wherever they need to feed their baby. So that's really one of the main goals, is having people feel comfortable breastfeeding in public, which Juno is a pretty supportive community for that already.
Uh-huh.
But the more we can normalize that, the better.
And what are the specifics of the event for here in Juno?
Well, good question. So this Saturday, it's going to be, the location is at the Diamond Park Fieldhouse. And from 10 to noon is the time that we're sort of setting aside to gather. The actual official latch-on time is 10:30 in the morning on Saturday the 6th. So we are asking people to show up around 10 o'clock to register. We actually do count moms who are latching on, and then also their supporters are counted as well. They separate that out to recognize supporters of breastfeeding and then people who are actually latching. Oh, and I do want to also mention that we are encouraging moms who are exclusively pumping to come as well. That certainly is counted in breastfeeding, and they do, you know, they just have to latch onto their pump essentially and pump as part of the group, and that gets counted as part of the numbers as well.
Yeah.
Excellent. So this is a one-day event, but going back to what we said earlier, the idea is to raise awareness both for moms who are breastfeeding and their families, but also for the wider community so that they don't think there's anything untoward about that. What sort of long-term resources are available for moms who want to figure out how to incorporate this into their child-rearing strategies?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think this is a really amazing community to raise kids in, and part of that is the amazing support that you get with regard to breastfeeding in terms of community and peer support. We have a couple of baby groups, one that meets up at the hospital, one that meets at the birth center, and those are really great places to get peer support for breastfeeding. We also have a breastfeeding cafe, which meets once a month, and that's another, you know, designated for breastfeeding support, peer support. And then there's also the Breastfeeding Cafe Facebook page, which is online support, which I think is a great resource, especially for late-night questions or concerns that moms have. In terms of complications or professional support, there are 4 international board-certified lactation consultants that practice up at Bartlett Hospital, and there's also support that's available through WIC, Women, Infants, and Children.
All right, so those are some, you know, some of them are 24/7 online resources, and others require a little more advanced preparation to reach out and access.
Yep.
And so you've already characterized Juneau as a fairly breastfeeding-friendly place, but I guess it'll be more breastfeeding-friendly after this Saturday,
right,
you know, as more people learn about this event and go and participate in it. So going forward, there is a website, I understand, that listeners could go to if they want to learn more about this Saturday's event and about the entire movement?
Yes, they can just if you just Google the Big Latch On, it'll take you right to the main event page, and you can search for our location, and it'll come right up. It's also an event that we've shared throughout some public groups, like on Facebook, the Juno Parents page and the Juno Breastfeeding Cafe. But in terms of finding the location, they can easily go to the Big Latch On and search for our location.
Excellent. All right. Well, Sarah Gress and Shana Rohrer, I want to thank you both so much for coming on our Juno Afternoon. Anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today?
Just, I think, to add for the event that it is not just for not just for the breastfeeding moms. We are inviting their entire family to come. It's aimed at being a family event. And part of the choice in choosing the field house is that we will have the Turf for Tot toys out and the bouncy house, and there will be some food available as well, and then also some fun door prizes that have been provided by Bustin' Out Boutique and Fiddleheads and Ferns, and Juno Public Health has some fun giveaways as well for some kids. So,
all right, so
it should be good.
This Saturday, the 6th of August, 10:30 a.m. at the Diamond Park Fieldhouse.
Yes.
And to learn more, go to www.biglatchon.org and search for the Juno event. All right, Sarah and Shana, thanks once again, and have a wonderful Juno afternoon.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
It is 44 minutes after the hour. Today is Tuesday, the 2nd of August. Ben Brown here on a Juno afternoon. And I have James Hoagland here with me in the studio. How are you, James?
Good. Thanks, Ben.
And we also have someone on the line. Can you hear me?
I can. Hi, Ben.
How are you?
I am living the dream, and that was an entertaining number I just heard.
It has some drag potential, doesn't it?
It certainly does. It just needs a little...
Exactly.
...to go along with it.
So, we are going to be looking forward to a heat wave in Juneau this weekend, literally and figuratively.
Yes.
And
absolutely.
So, James, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about the idea behind the Summer Drag Soiree?
Sure. Thanks, Ben. So we've been doing a kind of quarterly big drag shows here in Juneau the last year, and they've been so much fun. Usually we have them over at the Rendezvous, and that's where we're having this one on Saturday night, and it's the summer season's turn to have their own drag show. So we've got a bunch of Juneau drag performers, drag kings and queens, and we also have a very special guest all the way from New York City, Miss Delighted to be here.
And I'm sure she will be delighted to be here, because our heat wave is going to be much more comfortable than whatever heat wave they're having in New York right now. Am I right?
That's right. I think I'm going to bring a sweater.
You'll be hot in the sweater.
Yeah, you will. Our forecast is a high near 66 on Saturday, mostly cloudy. We consider that balmy-ass hot here in Juneau. We get out the coconut butter and the pina coladas when it's like that. So
I think that sounds incredible.
So coming all the way from New York, that's quite a distance to make for this trip. We're very glad that you can make it all that way. Are you just going to come straight out and go all the way back, or are there intervening stops?
I am going straight out and straight back, because I have weekly shows here in New York City, and so basically I will finish my show on Wednesday night and go to the airport and head y'all's way.
Wow, well, that is devotion, and again, we are very grateful for that. Where do you perform in the city?
I perform at two regular bars weekly, and that's on Sunday and Wednesday at a bar in the West Village called Pieces, and it's like the Cheers of the West Village. It's a lot of fun. On Sundays I host bingo, and on Wednesday nights I host a Broadway show called Ravel Dazzle with my co-host Sutton Lee Seymour, and then on Tuesdays I host a talk show with a friend of mine named Pixie Aventura, and we do a show called Late Night Tea. It's kind of your favorite morning show, but at night. So we're like the Kathy Lee and Hoda of drag queens. It's more of a talk about hot topics, and then for the commercial breaks, we do our performances.
Excellent. I actually lived in Perry Street for 3 months when I was at the end of law school, and I went to Pieces. I went to the Monster, I went to Stonewall, and what the hell, I went to Pieces too. So you got to go to Pieces every now and then, right?
You do. I mean, you fall to Pieces sometimes.
Yes.
You just stumble down Christopher Street.
So I'm sure there will be a good crowd. We've got two shows coming up this Saturday night, one at 8 and one at 10 p.m., and, James, a little more detail on about people, what the cost is to get in and the sort of the schematics of how the show is going to work at the Rendezvous.
So the doors are going to open at 7. Well, the doors will be open all day because it's a Rendezvous and it's a bar. But seating will open at 7. We'll have some limited seating up near the stage. So if you want a seat, I would suggest definitely getting there by 7 for that. And then the first show starts at 8. And it'll be about an hour and 15 minutes. We'll have a little intermission. And then the second show starts at 10. And the shows will be different, completely different shows. So you can come and stay for one long night of fabulous and exciting drag and lots of fun at the bar. Or you can pick and choose either one if that fits better with your busy summer schedule. And it's $8 to get in, and you can pay with cash or a card at the door. But you probably want to bring cash to tip all the queens and kings, because that's just so much more fun.
That's the way it's done.
That's just how we do it.
Excellent. So
it's true. I'm a Southerner, so tipping ain't just for cows anymore.
Excellent, Delighted. Excellent. And so Gigi Monroe is going to be there as well.
Yes.
Is there any chance Sarah Palin's going to be there, or is she out on the campaign trail?
She is campaigning hard right now for Trump, because he really needs it.
Running around,
so she'll be
cleaning
busy.
Up. Indeed.
But some other superstars will definitely be there. And, you know, the really cool thing about Delighted that the Juno audiences really haven't seen yet is a live singing drag queen.
Oh, yes.
So Delighted is an incredible vocalist and sings for probably all of her shows, really. But she also does celebrity impersonation, so we're going to get to see a little bit of both. And, you know, the story behind all of this is that we both started drag around the same time about 12 years ago down in Georgia and South Carolina, and have just led parallel lives in this crazy business of entertaining people. And I thought, what better way to treat Juno and get to see a great old friend than to bring Delighted here to Juno?
Well, delighted to be here. We are going to be delighted to have you here.
Well, I'm going to be delighted to be there. And it's just really exciting that I'm in New York City right now, and I'm going to be in Juneau, Alaska in 2 days. It's still one of the joys of my life to think that my career of being a drag queen is taking me from everywhere to L.A. to Juneau, Alaska to London. And it's certainly not the most conventional form of employment, but this has been a wonderful way of making people laugh and think for over a decade. I just hit 15 years this past February.
Well, congratulations to you. That is a wonderful milestone. And so once again, delighted to be here. We'll be part of the Heat Wave Summer Drag Soiree this Saturday, the 6th of August at 8 and 10 p.m. at the Rendezvous. No tickets in advance. Just show up with a credit card if you want to be that way, but otherwise with lots of cash, and have some drinks and watch a wonderful show. So thank you very much, James.
Thank you.
Thank you, Delighted. We will see you this weekend, okay?
Thanks, Ben.
Okay, bye now. Thanks, James.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, I was walking down the street one day, reading the sign and passing away. And after a while, I started to see that none of those words referred to me. Goodwill towards men. All men are created equal. Praise him. Well, I asked some friends if they agreed that they felt left out in the things they read. They told me yes and added some more. And soon, we all felt pretty sore. Congressman and businessman, spaceman, sideman. But I sure never heard of no house husband. Well, some men came by and a fight began to grow.
Girls are so dumb, you just don't know. These here are called generic words. They're meant to include both the bees and the birds.
Well, gee, fella, how am I supposed to know? I certainly don't feel included.
Too bad.
Well, okay, said I. If that's so true, I'll just use woman to cover the two.
Don't make a difference to us,
they said.
If you want to use woman, go right ahead.
I said, thanks. That's real sisterly of you. Glad to see you believe in sportswomanship.
Well, now, just hold your horses.
They started to cry. I think I'll hold my mares, said I.
You're leaving all of us guys behind.
Why, no. We're all part of womankind.
Oh.
So don't fret, friends. Take it like a woman. You'll get used to it. Just like we all did.
It's 52 minutes, almost 53 minutes after the hour. Today's Tuesday, the 2nd of August. Ben Brown here on a Juneau afternoon. I want to welcome Sean Isley and Kelly Sorensen from Discovery Southeast. Welcome to a Juneau afternoon.
Thanks, Ben.
Thanks, Ben.
And you're here to share some information about a photographic exhibit at COPA that represents some of the work some of the Discovery Southeast campers were able to do this summer.
Yeah, we had a couple of photo camps this week, and our summer camps range in number of different topics and places that we go. But we had a couple of weeks of photo camp where the kids got out into the community and they took some pictures. And so those photos will be exhibited on Friday.
Outstanding. And so the exhibit's not open yet, but it will be on Friday, and it's at COPA. So the beauty of that is you can have gelato and look at photographs.
It's true. There might also be some blueberry ice cream that was blueberries that were picked by our campers as well.
Excellent.
Just laying some more bait there for you.
How many young people participated in the Discovery Southeast Camp summer camp this summer?
Ooh, that's a good question. You got that one, John?
Let me do some quick math. I think it was about 200 seats. We had a double session again this summer, so we've been expanding the last couple of years. And we had programming 8 weeks of the summer, so two full camps going every week for those 8 weeks. So I think it was about 200 spots in camp.
Outstanding. And the second session is just wrapping up this week?
The last week. This is the last week of summer camp.
Okay. And so then they're all going to have a few weeks off before school begins.
Yep, and then we start in nature studies. We're in each every third, fourth, and fifth grade classroom for the school year doing hands-on nature education.
So Discovery Southeast is obviously not just a seasonal program anymore. It's offering year-round nature information and education to mostly young people. Are there many adult programs?
We have some adult programs. We have some walks. We have teacher expeditions where we work with teachers during the summer so they're more comfortable bringing nature into their classrooms. And, you know, I think the thing that's awesome about, certainly about nature studies that's in the school classroom where we reach every child just as part of the school system, but also about the Outdoor Explorers Summer Camp is that we have a ton of scholarships and they're really easy to get. So there's no barrier for any family that wants to come to summer camp. We make sure that it's a sliding scale tuition for any family that wants to join.
And these are not just day camps, right? This is camping camp.
We've had a couple of different focuses for our summer camp this summer. So our regular camp is we have two sessions, one for 7 to 9-year-olds and then the next for 10 to 12-year-olds. And we go out to Juneau trails every day and explore nature. Sometimes there's a focus for those. So we had a Juneau Rocks Week where we took them rock climbing. We had geologists like Kathy Connor come in and speak to the kids about geological time and history. We did a salmon camp, which was a great way to tie kids into the community, I think. And then we did our specialty photography camp. So besides that, we have our classic camp weeks where sometimes we'll go wild edible foraging, sometimes we'll build boats out of natural materials, and sometimes we'll play games. So it's really a variety.
Yeah, no, that's a really deep curriculum.
Yeah.
And how long has the Discovery Southeast been around? Many, many years.
27 years. I think pretty soon it'll be 28 this fall.
Right, and there will be no doubt a gala fundraiser as there is every fall, I'm pretty sure.
We'll have March or April.
We'll have somebody on to talk about that when the time gets closer. Well, so anything else you'd like to share with our listeners other than maybe some reminder information about how they can go and look at these wonderful young people's photographs this Friday?
You know, you mentioned the fundraiser, and I should say that the summer camp and the scholarships are made possible by a lot of great supporters. We get big support from the U.S. Forest Service for our summer programs, as well as Gaston Guiding Company. And then Discovery Southeast members make a lot of donations, and that's what really allows for the scholarships this summer. So it's a great program, and we're fortunate to have them in our community.
And if people want to learn more, Discovery Southeast website is?
DiscoverySoutheast.org.
Very simple. So go learn more about what happened this summer, how you can become a member, how you can support increasing educational opportunities for young Alaskans. I want to thank you, Sean Isley and Kelly Sorensen, for being on a Juneau Afternoon today.
Thank you.
See you on Friday.
Okay, very good. See you go on Friday.
Hello, mother. Hello, father. I am back at Camp Granada, and I'm writing you this letter just to say my compound fracture's getting better. No one here knows where my trunk is, and my bunk is where the skunk is, and the food this year's improving. All the little black things in it are not moving. Our camp nurse is quite a swimmer. She says swimming makes you slimmer. Her name's Mrs. Pellegrini. Have you ever seen a whale in a bikini?
And thanks for listening to a Juneau Afternoon today. That's a couple minutes before the hour. Tomorrow on a Juneau Afternoon, there will be a preview of Perseverance Theater's newest production, Peter and the Starcatcher. Karen Fortwängler will be here to highlight Saturday's fundraising dinner for Helping Hands. Rick Caulfield from UAS will be here with hints for getting ready for college. And Fumi Matsumoto and M.K. McNaughton will be here with details on their upcoming First Friday Chicken Art Show. The weather forecast, it's going to get a little rainier tonight and rain kind of intensely tomorrow, 100% chance of precipitation. But then tomorrow night, it's going to recede to being just showers, and on Thursday, it's going to be mostly sunny, and Thursday night, partly cloudy, Friday, partly sunny, and some partly cloudy, sunny conditions through the weekend, so something to look forward to. Thanks again for listening to a Juneau Afternoon.
Don't worry, Fata Mata, I'll take care of little brother, he plays ball here, and he rows here.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS
an excursion inlet and icy strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI cable on Ditch.